Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 436 of the podcast. And I'm actually recording this early as I'll be in Spain with my family as this goes out. It's my dad's 70th birthday, so all my siblings and partners and kids and things are hanging out in northern Spain on the beach with lots of sangria. So that will be fun. So I'm just doing a short intro this week. So today I'm interviewing Lorelei King, multi-award-winning audiobook narrator and co-author of Storyteller, How to Be an Audiobook Narrator, which in my opinion is a must-listen audiobook, and also on Kindle now as a transcript. So I devoured this when it first came out because, as you probably know by now, I have been moving to a voice-first model and learning how to be a more effective narrator. And I have this new little recording booth in my house, and I've been recording successful self-publishing is my first production from my new booth, and that will be out probably mid-July 2019. So Lorelei has a wonderful voice, and her audiobook is full of practical tips, like what to eat in order to stop rumbly tummies, and also what to do if you mess things up, but also great ways to make the most of your voice. So that is coming up. So today's show is appropriately sponsored by findawayvoices.com, which gives you access to the world's largest network of audiobook sellers and everything you need to create professional audiobooks. You can find and hire narrators, you can narrate and self-publish your own, and brilliantly, you can do it from anywhere in the world. As the main option for indies, ACX has only been open to a few countries, so Findaway gives you that advantage. Even more benefits, Findaway gives you access to more vendors, like Storytel, which is eating up the markets where Audible is not dominant, as well as Scribd and Kobo Audio, which are subscription models. And importantly, libraries, which I know many authors care deeply about. They have a fantastic pay-per-checkout model, so you can get recurring payments on your audio. And even more benefits. You can set your own price, which you can't on the other platform, and you can sell direct through Authors Direct. That is currently restricted to specific countries, but I'm lobbying for more. Plus, you can get access to audiobook promotions and into BookBub's Chirp promotion service, which is opening up marketing possibilities for audio. So I'm now going wide with all my audio, pulling my books out of exclusivity, which you can do if you own the rights. Just email and ask to switch to non-exclusive. So take back your freedom, go wide with audio with findawayvoices.com. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, transcription and editing, but my time in creating the show is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. Thank you to everyone who supports the show on Patreon. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. You can support the show with just a couple of dollars per month or a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, including the backlist. So tons more audio fun and useful stuff too. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the interview. Today, I'm here with Lorelei King. Hello, Lorelei.
Hi, Joanna. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Just a little introduction.
Yes.
Lorelei is an actress, multi-award-winning audiobook narrator, writer, script editor, and creative entrepreneur. She is the co-author and narrator of Storyteller, How to Be an Audiobook Narrator, along with Ali Muirden, and is one of the first inductees into the Audible Narrator Hall of Fame. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Oh, it's fun to be here. Thanks so much for that lovely introduction.
Well, I loved this and I jumped on it as soon as I heard about it on Audible. I just got it. And I want first to ask you a bit more. How did you get into audiobook narration in the first place?
Yes. Now we have to go back quite a few years. They were practically on wax discs then. That's not true. I mean, the first book I ever did was because of an animation I was doing, and the director had another job. He had this book of short stories to do, needed an American female voice. It was just a matter of being right place, right time, right accent. And he was very nervous about using me because I hadn't done it before. But I just kind of discovered I had a knack for it. And he was really, really happy. He booked a whole day in studio. But we finished it in the morning, so he took me to lunch. We had a very boozy lunch, as I recall. And I learned that after that, that wasn't necessarily how the business works. And after that, I mean, I've always loved reading. And so it wasn't a hardship. I thought this is a good gig. And I served a kind of apprenticeship, I guess you'd call it, at the RNIB, the Royal National Institute for the Blind. They, in those days, and I think still now, had volunteer readers. You had to audition. They were quite strict in what they wanted. And you would go in and do half-day sessions. And I learned so much because you also took whatever they gave you. So you had not just crime fiction or some was nonfiction, all kinds of things. Book of rather elegant pornography by Anne Eason. I did that.
Oh, wonderful. I love that book.
Yeah, it was really good. And things like that. So I spent some years doing that. And I think that really prepared me to move into audiobooks. And when Chivers, as was, which used to be in Bath, which I think is where you're based, it then became BBC Audiobooks. They did the same thing. They had a lot of studios and it was like a little factory when we were little chickens pushing out little audiobook eggs and stuff. And that really solidified my body of work.
Yeah. Wow. And it's so interesting because like you talk there, and I mean, most of my audience are probably not going to be doing full-time narration like you do, but many authors are interested in narrating either their own books or potentially some in the same genre. So first of all, how has the audiobook industry changed, while you've been doing it? What, I guess, are there more opportunities now as well?
Yes, that's a big question because there have been technical changes, certainly. Mm-hmm. Just simply the way we record has changed. It used to be tape reel to reel. You literally had to roll back if you made a mistake. Digital changed everything, not just in the technique, but also in the opportunities because audio then was so expensive. It was normally only libraries who could have unabridged audio. They would tend to abridge books for the mass market, which ultimately a lot of people don't like. It's not satisfying not to hear an author's whole work. So digital brought the price down, made it much more accessible for people to own, then download again completely changed everything. As to opportunities, and that has led, I think, to opportunities because people want audio. People want to do it maybe while they're doing other stuff. It's how they want to consume books. It's how they want to read. And publishers are starting to look at their backlists and how to get that done. New writers are wanting their books done in audio. Self-published writers are wanting, as you say, to have their books done, fiction and nonfiction, in audio. So I think it's opened up a field because there's a big demand for narrators. And I think someone who really is determined and has even a little bit of talent to develop can have a real go at it.
And so why this book now? Why Storyteller? I wondered if that was related to the changes.
Oh, no one's ever asked me that, but it's a good question because I was clearing up an old laptop and I was going through some emails from 10 years ago. I was pitching this idea to my business partner 10 years ago. I think I even pitched it to Audible in America 10 years ago. And at the time, it just didn't feel right. Ali said, I'm not sure there's going to be the demand and that kind of thing. And I think she was right on reflection because digital hadn't really taken off the way it had. But it never left me, this desire to share what I know. And as time goes on, and I still do narrate a lot, but also I do want to pass on some of my tricks and tips and just help people become narrators. So the time seemed right. and we did it.
Yeah, I think the time is totally right. In fact, I think you're at the beginning of what is a huge boom. And I mean, we both were at London Book Fair and we saw audiobooks are the fastest growing publishing segment. So, and of course, you can't narrate all the books in the world. So you have to train some other people.
Well, and I'm not right for every book in the world either. This is the thing. There's room for all kinds of voices and all kinds of styles.
And actually, that's a good question to start with. So the right narrator is a really difficult question. It's a hard question for an author who knows their own book in their own voice in their head. But how do we know who is the right narrator?
I think normally, at least traditionally, a publisher will decide. Authors traditionally actually don't have a big say. Maybe a huge author would have a say as to who would narrate. And the publishers have a lot of experience. It'll be the kind of book, the accents required, whether it's male or female. They break it down like that. And they tend to go to a pool of narrators that they know or actors that they know. And it is hard to break into that. For an author who has the ability to decide their own narrator, I feel for them in a way because they're hearing the voice in their heads and it's never going to be that. But I think those kind of authors will know better than anyone who they want or the kind of voice they want. And if they are not sure, I mean, if you're asking how would they find, they could go listen to a lot of samples and a voice on Audible, you can listen to tons of free samples and a voice might click that you think, oh, this is the perfect person to narrate my book.
And actually, you do a great thing in Storyteller where you kind of give examples because you've got, you're a very experienced narrator and you give these examples of different notes and you change your voice, which is amazing. But I wondered from your experience, have you ever felt like, oh, you know, this type of book is not my thing or I prefer this type of book?
Yes. Oh, my God. There are books where I have thought I wasn't the right narrator. And I'm just trying to think if there's an example. I mean, I've never, once I take on a project.
Yeah, you can't give an actual example.
Yeah, no, I can't say, you know what? But there have been times when I've this happened recently, actually. I think I was the right narrator for part of a series. For the rest of the series, I thought it might require a British Isles narrator. And I'm happy to, you know, say that. I'm not going to be precious about it. One book, oh my God, it still haunts me. Many years ago, I do not believe it is available in any form, and I can't remember the name. The last third of the book was an American woman. Made sense, they hire an American narrator. The first two-thirds of the book were set in South Africa in the 19th century with like 57 male Scottish characters. And that was one of the books where I cried. I ended up crying because I just found it too difficult. And I'm still not convinced I was ultimately the right narrator for that book.
And which kind of brings me to another question. And this is a totally selfish question around my own narration, which is you're an actress. You have pedigree in acting and many famous voices. Miriam Margolyes in Britain would be a good example. All the accents amazingly, and you know, you yourself as well. But what about straight reads? So there are some authors, Neil Gaiman, Stephen King has done some, where it's more of a straight read. There are some narrators who do a straight read without accents. So what are your thoughts on that difference between the accent style versus straight read?
You're talking about fiction that has dialogue.
Yes, for fiction specifically.
I think if you have someone like Neil Gaiman or Stephen King reading their own work, that brings with it something special in that they know what they wrote and they know how to interpret it. And I think that's one case. To be honest, I think generally speaking, in the UK, they like a more a bigger read, a more accented read, a more characterized read. My experience is in America, they prefer, generally speaking, they prefer something slightly a lower level, slightly, if I say flatter, that sounds wrong, but you know what I mean, not quite so characterized. I think there's room for both, and it depends on the style. As long as, unless it's a comic novel, when anything goes, I think you don't want to sound like you're making fun of an accent. I think the suggestion of an accent is better, because otherwise it's distracting. But I like a performance. So for my personal taste, I do like defined characters. Also, you have to be able to, this is crucially important and one of the reasons to do it. The ultimate goal is clarity for the listener. The listener has to know who's speaking. Otherwise, they're going to be pulled out of the story. Like, what? Who said that? So that's often easier to do if you've chosen a very characterized voice.
Which is really interesting. Brings me to another question. So I've been adapting my own work for my own narration, and that's what I've done. When I've read a line and there isn't clarity and I know I can't do an accent, I've rewritten the line, which... cheeky, eh? I know, and that's not what an audiobook narrator can do. But are there other tips for authors who want to do the best thing for their narrator? For example, commas are something that editors remove.
Oh, commas. Well, there are things you can do. I record probably one of my most well-known series is Janet Ivanovich's Stephanie Plum series. Now, she, for example, she writes brilliant dialogue. It is so good, so strong. And I said to her once, your dialogue is just amazing. Where does that come from? She said, I went and took a drama class, an improvisation class, to learn about dialogue, to learn what works. She did that specifically to inform her writing, and it worked. So that's a tip from Janet Ivanovich, not from me, but that's one thing. I think just technically things they could do to help. You mentioned commas. If you have long meandering sentences, maybe read it out loud yourself and see, are there places where people can breathe? Because that can be a real challenge. I quite like that challenge, to be honest. I like to find a way through a sentence. That can be fun. But that helps punctuation. The one that is almost impossible to solve is parenthetical remarks. By this I mean, because something that works on the printed page won't work in voice. Like if where it breaks, if you said something like, he saw the car, it was red, not the red of an apple, not the red of a post box, more the red of a broken vein, car.
Yeah.
And it's like, that may work on the page, but to do that vocal is impossible. I mean, you can't do it to make it sound in any way graceful or elegant. So maybe at least thinking about those parenthetical remarks.
What about, and how they're gonna be. Yeah, what about when a character is saying something out loud, but then there might be something in their head that they're not saying, you know? So it's almost, and maybe sometimes it's in italics, as in it's in their thoughts, and it doesn't say she thought, it just has it kind of in italics. Do you just kind of change the pitch of your voice?
You have to have several voices when you're reading, even if it's first person, like maybe that would be, you have to have your narrator's voice where you're reading. Hey, what am I talking about? God, she couldn't believe she said that out loud. You know, you need three voices. You need your narrator's voice, your dialogue voice, and your inner voice. And that's just practice. That's just, you know, think about it. Think how you're going to do that. But those can be tricky. This is what I say. This is where the art comes in of it, and the where the craft of it more than the art, the technique becomes so important.
Yeah. So I just coming back to the reading then, because many authors think that a narrator just reads their work. But why is narration an adaptation and a performance, like you say?
I think it's more an interpretation. I think it's like a play. A playwright writes the play and delivers it to the hands of the actors, who then interpret it. And that interpretation becomes an art. And, you know, it's not just read. I mean, I'll give you an example. Shall I give you an example?
Yeah.
I just have this little thing, because I was thinking about, so if I just read, she had to calm down. With a superhuman effort, she gradually steadied and slowed her breathing. Why then did she still hear it, ragged and fast? Oh, it wasn't her breath she was hearing, it was her killer's. Okay, I read that. You got the information.
Yeah.
But if I were to perform it, it would be more, you have to be in the moment. It's like, she had to calm down. With a superhuman effort, she gradually steadied and slowed her breathing. Why then did she still hear it, ragged and fast? Oh, it wasn't her breath she was hearing. It was her killer's. So, you know, it's different. You're going to be more engaged with the second read, I think.
Oh yeah, and it's so fantastic. But I think you, because again, you have this acting training. I think this is where many authors who want to do their own work, but this is also why author events are often so terrible. Like at book launches, it's like, here, read a chapter. And the poor author is just, you know, kind of bereft trying to read. But as you're showing, it's more about inhabiting the moment. So when you're scanning, I mean, when you're scanning a book, when you're preparing a book, how are you preparing yourself to be in that moment, to perform?
I think when I'm prepping a book for narration, I don't think you can prepare for being in the moment. You can prepare to help yourself in the moment by marking any peculiar stresses or and deciding your character voices and perhaps marking a breath if it's a long passage. Being in the moment, this is a personal thing. It's sort of, for me, it's almost like it's being in a state of grace. Once you've prepared as much as you can, the words know how they want to be said. And I think you just kind of let it go. That's all you can do. And not be self-conscious. I think this is a big problem with people who are inexperienced actors or narrators, is that they feel a little self-conscious and things maybe sound really big to them. Because I've worked with people who've not narrated before who are not actors, and they'll deliver something and I'll be like, no, more, yeah, further. And it's like, oh my, but it sounds like, and they're thinking it sounds like some big clown performance, but it doesn't. You'd be amazed. It's big in their heads, but it's actually just right if they hit it very hard. And that's just practice, really. And taping yourself and listening. And you mentioned writers at their own events. I always feel for them too, because then it's nerves as well. I'd find that nerve wracking.
Well, and another thing I think many people, even coming on a podcast like this, people always say they don't like their own voice. And I'm sure it's been a while since you felt that, but any tips for kind of getting used to that feeling? Does it ever go away, I guess?
I think it does go away. It's funny you mentioned that. I remember the very first time I ever heard my own voice when I was young on a tape recorder. It was such a shock, because we don't hear ourselves like other people do. You can, if you put your hands behind your ears and push your ears forward, you will hear yourself a little bit like other people hear you. But otherwise, you never will. Never. And the only way, I think, to get used to it is to listen to it. And that entails taping yourself. It doesn't have to be like just on the phone, on your phone or something like that, or your laptop, and listen and get used to it so that you don't feel self-conscious.
I mean, I've been podcasting now for 10 years, so I'm kind of used to my own voice. But I also wondered about mouth noise, because again, you do some great noise effects on Storyteller, on the audio version. And I've got this kind of clicky jaw thing that seems to happen. I think it's related to being dehydrated or something. So, and then also people feel like, oh, I just messed up a sentence. What do I do now? So what are some of your thoughts on not being perfect and I guess the editing process?
Editing can help. If you're talking about noise, some noises are, some people are made, don't make so much noise just because of the way their face is. Ali says that I'm lucky because I don't have a noisy build to my, I don't know what it is. Some people are very smacky. Hydration is key. Hydration is everything. Every couple of pages, sip and sloosh. You mentioned a cracking jaw. That's interesting. There's another thing too. They call a nose knock. I think some people have a sinus noise and those are almost impossible. There's nothing you can do to fix it. And that's where you have to hope the editor can edit out clicks, extraneous clicks and all that. But it depends on the kind of book. I don't think any book is ever absolutely perfect. There's always going to be a little bit of noise that slips through.
Yeah. And what about just getting the line wrong? And again, you have some great bloopers in the audio, but what happens if you mess up a line?
It depends on the technique that you're using in the studio. I like fluff and repeat. I hate rolling back, as they say, but which means if you mess up a line, you just stop, leave a brief editing break, and then the editor can do it clean. You have to say it exactly as you said it, though, so it will cut together. That's important. Some studios use what they call rock and roll in this country, punching in, they call it in America. And that means if you make a mistake, you stop the rollback probably to the end of a sentence so that it's clean. You'll hear yourself say the previous line, and then you just say the line again. So there are those techniques. Oh, I should tell you a little thing. I was so proud about our book. There's an author called Christy Shen, and she sent an email. She's written a book called Quit Like a Millionaire, I think, and she's going to be narrating her own book. And my business partner, Allie, is producing her, and she got our book. And so she wrote to Allie. Allie said it was fantastic. She got all these like really intelligent questions, like saying, what are we going to be doing? Are we, you know, rock and rolling, or are we going to be doing this? And she said she felt really, having read it, she felt really prepared, more prepared to go into studio. And that just, oh, it made me so happy, because that was one of the things we wrote the book for, was for people to whom it's a mystery and who might be a little intimidated or not know what to expect. So that was great. So now she's going to know what to do.
Oh, I learned so much. And absolutely. I've listened to it like twice already, and I've got obviously getting the hard copy as well at some point. So very exciting. But I want to ask you about nonfiction, because obviously Storyteller is nonfiction. You do fiction, nonfiction. And I've asked about accents and things for fiction, but some people think nonfiction is, in quotation marks, easier because there's no accents. But what are your thoughts on emotional resonance, I guess, or feeling in nonfiction that makes it come alive?
I think nonfiction is harder. It has different kinds of difficulty, like keeping it sounding fresh and not sounding tired. And as you say, if you're narrating your own work, something you've written, nonfiction, then I think you bring to it, your own passion, which is really, really useful. If you're narrating someone else's nonfiction, that's the challenge, is to keep it, even though it's not your subject, not your words, is to keep it alive and warm and keep the tone engaged so that people, it isn't just a flat, like blah, 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 blah information. I think that's one of the challenges. You can have the problem of deciding what to do with accents. Sometimes if you are quoting people or if it's historical, you know, you talk about historical figures and it's like, whoa, what do? And I think it's a personal choice. I wouldn't go for a full-blown JFK, for example, but you might want to give just a hint of something or use a quote voice. I have a quote voice, which I prefer to use, which is when I'm saying something in quotes, I give it more like it's a quote and then revert to narration. So you can use those kind of tricks. But I think the main thing with nonfiction is stamina.
Yeah, which is really my next question, because the most surprising thing to me when I did my first book a few years ago, and it put me off. I thought there was something wrong with me because I came out and I was exhausted and I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Why can't I do this? So talk about why is it so tiring and what can we do about that?
Wow. This, and I tell you what, Joanna, that is like the number one thing people say. I'm not going to mention any names, but a certain fiction author, I was hired to do a book of hers, and she said she wanted to narrate herself. Fair enough. And then phoned me again a half day later and said, can you come back and do it anyway? Because she had no idea. It's nothing against her. It's just she had no idea what it took. And by lunchtime was like, oh my God, everyone's surprised who hasn't done it. And I don't know why it is. I suppose it's the level of concentration and it's intense. It's really intense experience to narrate an audiobook. It's physically tiring and mentally tiring. And it's your eyes get tired as well. The important solutions, I think taking breaks, little breaks, not too many. You don't want to eat up too much studio time, but even just it's like a change. You need to change something. Stand up, change your posture, go out and look at the light, go out and breathe some air, even just going to the loo. Sometimes if it's like not convenient to take a break, if you say, oh, I'm really sorry, I just have to, it just gives you a different thing. Hydration, of course, drink, and which gives you that loo excuse more often. So, and eat. You have to keep up your blood sugar. That's why at studios, they have a lot of bananas are best. Bananas are great because they're not very noisy as you digest them. So little and often eat to keep up your blood sugar. And that's the only thing I can suggest. And you have to be conscious. Don't let it drop. And that takes will. I do have a trick I use when I get really tired, if I can't take a break. You can if you need a boost, pretend to read to someone. And I think it works if it's someone you really fancy. And just imagine you're just reading this next section just for them because you're going to want to impress them. So, you know, it will help bring it a little bit alive. And I also reach my grandma's long gone, but sometimes I read to her. It just gives a little focus to that section, and that can help. So yeah. Those are some of my tips.
Yeah. I mean, you can't see it, but I've just built an audio booth in the corner. Of my office because of this reason, because I've tried hiring a studio, but I can't do like more than a couple of hours without feeling so tired. And I'm not doing it like professionally, like you, as a job. So I thought, well, if I have it at home, I can get up, do an hour or two, and then, you know, I don't have to keep popping in to a studio. So, I mean, that's one option, I guess. And I think the sound equipment has got a lot better, hasn't it? So you can do that.
Yeah. Yes, I think so. A lot of people are using home studios now. I haven't gone down that route. I still prefer a dedicated, you know, professional studio. But I agree with you. I think it's counterproductive to read for more than 3 or 4 hours. And if I have the choice, I will only do those kind of sessions. I'll do a shorter session. So I think it's smart. And especially if you have a home studio, yeah, do an hour and then go do another hour. That way, if you can control it, so much the better, because it is tiring. At BBC Audiobooks, we used to do 10 to 5, a full day's work. And a lot of places work that way. And it's hard.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I guess with that, like you mentioned drinking and eating. So when I went to the studio, the first one, I drank a lot of black coffee and I ate peanut butter. And peanut butter, see, like milky coffee with dairy and peanut butter. So why is that a really bad idea?
I mean, do I look like a scientist? I don't know. I couldn't tell you why, but for some reason, milk and coffee and peanut butter, I'm not heard, but that makes sense in a way because
it's a bit claggy. Yeah.
Yeah. A bit claggy. And that's the same with milk and coffee. And I mean, I love coffee, but I try not to have it, you know, I have it in the morning before I go to work and then don't have it during the day. And I've had to barter with narrators. I directed a book recently where he just loved his coffee, and it was like we had to make deals where he could have a coffee and then he couldn't have milk in it. He had to have a black and then he had to rinse his mouth out. So yeah, those kind of things you do have to avoid. If you keep drinking lots of water and cleaning your mouth out with water, it should be okay.
Should be okay. This is now the audiobook narrator diet: water and bananas.
Bananas.
that is it. That's all you're allowed. Okay.
Chocolate's so, not good either.
Sorry?
Chocolate's not good.
What about like 85% dark chocolate?
No, chocolate. I don't know why, but it's another thing that is really makes for clag.
Yeah, there we go. So I just want to come back on the tired voice thing, because even if as soon as your energy drops, your voice, as you say, you use the word drop, and I know what you mean, but some people listening might not know what that means. So how nuanced can people hear? Like, can you know, you really have to be on it, or you know, fake the on it, or how do we stop our voice dropping in that way?
To answer the first part of your question, I think people do. It's such an intimate medium. And people tend to listen like this through earphones. So they hear everything. And the voice shows everything. And sometimes it is faking it. I mean, the best thing to do is not to fake it, is to find somewhere in yourself something that will keep you going, like the trick about reading to someone or just having a quick break. And because it does matter and it will show. And it's not nice to hear essentially what becomes kind of a flat where someone maybe is lost the passion for what they're doing. And so also harder for the listener to pick out the sense. Another thing you could, especially with nonfiction, this is a good trick, is if you pretend, even if you've written it, you can pretend that this section, you're going to have to teach it to someone in 20 minutes. So it means you really pay attention to what's there. So, and like you try to learn it, you're trying almost to memorize it. And I think that can help. It's just finding all those little ways through, but I think it is important.
And then just our natural voices. So I sound like me, you sound like you, and that's part of who we are. And are there any bad voices. So people can use some of your tricks in the book to make the best of what they've got. But are there ever times when people just don't have a voice for narration?
Yeah. I have two feelings about this. Some voices, I shouldn't say that, some voices don't seem to naturally lend themselves. But I do feel very strongly about the importance of the individual voice. There are some things that are just bad habits. If your voice is very nasal, for example, that's a habit. That's not a natural voice. And you might need professional help, but you can engage someone to teach you not to do that. Or people who talk on creak, like a lot of young people do today, that's just laziness. And that's a habit that can be corrected. Those kind of incredibly irritating habits should be gotten rid of, I think. But we are all unique. We have a unique voice. And I think it's important to make the best of it. As you say, make the best of what you've got. But don't be afraid of it or ashamed of it. It's your voice. And I know you're a writer as well as a narrator now. And so the way you write, that's your voice. The way you narrate, that's your voice. And it's just as important to be true to your own sound and your own style and your own self.
And so the last question I wanted to ask you is a more of a futurist question, because I've already had a company ask about my voice and training AIs with my voice. There's a lot of your voice out there that could be used to train an AI. And we're seeing the rise of AIs like Amazon Polly for narration, Lyrebird.ai is something I've had a look at for sort of voice synth. So what are your thoughts on the next sort of, in a sort of 5 to 10 years, when this type of technology becomes more common, what do you see? Will there be a stratification, you know, an AI narrated very cheap version and then an artisan narration, or what do you think is going to happen?
I think it's, for narrators, it's a worry. I think it is going to continue to develop. You mentioned Lyrebird, something like that. I think it's incredibly useful for that, the way they use it for people who have motor neuron disease, that kind of thing, to synthesize their own voices, I think is a terrific use of it. Most of the AI I've heard is getting better. It still doesn't sound quite right to me. And I think ultimately, will it be stratified? I don't know. I think there's a place for it, perhaps in things that where it isn't cost effective to have a human narrator, like textbooks or certain types of nonfiction. There might be a place where they can live side by side. When it comes to fiction, I don't think, can AI have comic timing? Can AI understand nuance? Can they really be artists? I don't know. I think art requires human intent. And I think there's something about the human voice that will always pull us in and that can't be synthesized. So I don't know. I'm watching this space, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And also, I think people will want a person. Like, I'll want to, your book, for example, I'll want to pay for you to narrate it, but maybe there's an ultra cheap version I can get. Or if it's someone I don't care so much about their work, I might just want to consume something. So I see at the different levels where there might be a cheap poly version and then a human narration. Because there's so much content in the world that's not narrated.
Yes. And that's the trick. This is why I think at the same time there's room for a lot of narrators. I think there's room for more of us because there is so much content. But audio is very expensive to produce, and not all books will wear it. A lot of books might only get 100 downloads because it's very specific niche content. In that case, what better it's available, you know? So it will have its place, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. So just finish up by telling us. So if people want to check out Storyteller, how to be an audiobook narrator, I mean, we've talked about a lot of things, but anything else that's covered in the book that you want to mention?
I think it's just the thing about this book, it's strongly structured. I structured it to sort of take you through the journey about preparation, about what to expect. And I think it gives you a good, strong overview. We've had really nice feedback about it. I'd love to hear what people have to say about it. So there's that. It's available from all digital retailers, Audible as well as Kobo, all the others who are doing it. And we just with a little push from you, I have to say, we just published the companion script because a lot of people were asking for a transcript. Mm-hmm. It's a direct transcript. It's best used in conjunction with the audiobook where you get the demonstrations. That's something that can't be done in print. So that's available. It's on, we have a webpage, howtobeanaudiobooknarrator.com. Creative Content Digital, our publishing company, has it. LoreleiKing.com has it. And, you know, you can always find me on Twitter, Lorelei King, and ask me. I like talking audio. So, yeah, I think that's what you asked me. I'm not sure now. I've lost track.
No, that's fantastic. And I've, as I said, I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I'm so pleased to have you on the show because I think this is such an interesting point in history. And I think you've hit the nail on the head with this book. So I totally encourage people to go and get it. And thanks so much for coming on the show, Lorelei.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, thanks so much for your support. It means a lot. And I'm just very glad to have connected with you. I certainly see you. I've seen you on the Twitter beach for some time now, but it's nice to meet you face to face.
I hope you enjoyed today's show, especially if you're considering doing your own voice narration. So I'll be doing a course soon on podcasting and audiobooks for authors, as well as voice tech and voice first marketing. So you can ask your questions on my questionnaire and also get a discount on the course when it's available at thecreativepen.com/audioq. So AUDIOQ. Short for audio questionnaire, but that's a bit long. So yes, please do the questionnaire at thecreativepen.com/audioq. So next week, I'm doing a mega, almost solo show on AI for writers, authors, and publishers. And so you can expect lots of exciting things that will change your perspective on what's coming in the next few years for our industry. So I'll be super excited about all that. So happy writing, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.